I think it's also a very important time to have a good follow-up in place. It's like you said, some people aren't there yet, but a month from now, 2 months from now, they may be there. Make sure you stay at their top of mind. So when they make that decision, like, okay, I know who to call.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamanjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 254, and today we are doing part four of 12 common mistakes investors make when structuring creative financing offers. If you're looking for a mentor, check out ROIMentors.com. Jeff has two mentorships, the Apprentice Program and the Creative Financing Academy. You can learn more about these at ROIMentors.com. While listening to this episode, if you guys have questions, please head over to the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. If you're not part of the community, just search the Creative Financing Podcast in Facebook and ask to join. Looking for a free creative finance class? Jeff hosts a virtual one on Zoom the second Thursday of every month, so bring your questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can ask your questions in the comments below. Lastly, we want to thank you for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast with your friends.
All right. Well, hopefully everyone has found this series to be helpful. And I'm curious, the two of you who've heard me talk about probably every one of these multiple times, what are your thoughts on it? Do you think this would be helpful to our audience?
Yeah, I think it's always good to have the refresher, and then it's always good to have everything kind of packaged up. So, you know, if you have questions on, okay, I want to make sure I'm doing this right. Is there anything I'm forgetting? Come listen to these episodes or look through them again. You've got all that information in one place.
Yeah, because we repeat it a lot, but a lot of the information is kind of spread out in different episodes because we cover different things, obviously. But to have it all in one and be able to, like Cody said, it's just packaged in one. You can reference it quickly.
Well, and one of the things that when I started thinking about this particular series, that I probably could have had 15, 18, 20 mistakes, or I could have substituted some that we have and for others. I'm not sure if I picked all the best ones or the ones that are the most meaningful. I tried, but, and you'll see on these last three, these might be a little different. So let's get into it and see what we got. So this is mistake number 10. This one is based on my own experience, but I am seeing it all over the place right now. And that is not paying attention to what's going on in the market. And when I say that, you don't have to be, you don't have to follow the news on a daily basis, but you better have an idea of what's happening, not only in the real estate market, but, you know, more. I want to say globally, but not even necessarily globally, but nationally, right? So, hey, interest rates. Do we know that interest rates are going up? Right? Now, you know, you don't have to be, you know, watching the news daily to know interest rates are going up. What does that do to prices?
Knocks them down.
It certainly Usually. Should, right? I mean, I think yeah. That's the actual goal right now is to bring interest rates up that will eventually help bring prices down. What are landlords doing in terms of these higher interest rates?
Raising rents.
There may be opportunity to raise rents, right? Because housing is become even less affordable with higher interest rates. More people may need to rent. With more demand for rentals, could drive rental rates up. Are landlords looking at refinancing properties right now? Probably not. Maybe that creates an opportunity for us as investors, right? How does that affect, let's say, a fix and flipper? Does it? Does it not?
Yeah, it's harder to get. Or go ahead, Nicole.
I was going to say, they have to sell it once they're done flipping it. So, yeah.
Exactly. And yep, they're selling it to retail buyers that have to pay these higher interest rates, which may make it make the property more unaffordable, especially being able to sell it at a certain price. If prices are going down, rehabbers are having the challenge of trying to figure out what's a true ARV today, and then kind of predicting what that ARV might be in 4 to 6 months from now when the property is actually done and put on the market. Hey, is it easy to get bank financing right now?
No,
I don't know that it's I don't know that it's harder, but it certainly could start to get harder. But we do know that, hey, rates are significantly higher, and for everything, right? For owner occupants, for non-owner occupants, for commercial properties, for multifamily. When rates are higher, what does that do to our cash flow?
Definitely decreases it.
Yeah, if we're keeping the price the same or the amount financed the same, it's going to cut into our cash flow. So understanding how this can affect the market in general will help you with making certain decisions and structuring offers in certain ways. What are investors buying right now? You know, one of the things I see, maybe you guys see it too, is that not all the rehabbers that were in the market are still in the market. Some are taking a break. Some have switched strategies. Some are looking at doing some different kinds of things. And then there's always going to be the some that, hey, we still know what we're doing. We still can make this work. It's just a little bit more risky. But if you're trying to wholesale, hey, rehabbers may not be the same kind of buyer that they were for you 4 or 5 months ago. And hey, if I'm working virtually in various markets, not all the markets are doing the exact same thing. Cody and I currently live in the same state, but hey, it's a high price state. It's not a very good cash flow state. Prices are high and they're coming down. Things are sitting on the market longer and prices are coming down, and in some cases significantly down. In Florida, Nicole, there are probably parts that you're seeing the same thing, and there's probably parts that you don't see the same thing. Florida's got a little bit of everything. Some areas are good cash flowing areas, some parts not so well cash flowing areas. I own some properties in Ohio, and those properties are still moving on the MLS, but they're 200,000 and less properties. So understanding what's going on in the different markets will help you adapt to what's going on in the ever-changing real estate market. And now if you add creative finance to that, you can really structure some good deals and make things that, hey, a lot of people aren't interested in looking at or dealing with, and make a pretty mediocre or maybe not even a deal into a good deal. And so paying attention to what's going on really goes a long way in terms of helping you decide what to do with your leads and how to structure the offers.
Yeah. Do you have any specific sources or methods that you recommend people look at? I'm sure talking to other investors or.
So one obviously is, hey, if you're working consistently in some different markets, you're probably getting an idea of what things are doing, right? But talking to people that are involved in that market, realtors, lenders, hard money lenders, buyers, that will all help. I also have like certain notifications of news that I track, and I get tons and tons of emails, you know, from various educators and or prognosticators trying to determine where the market's going and what's going to happen with it. And I'll be totally honest, with anything national, with news media, got to take with a grain of salt, because seriously, you can get one notification saying, oh my God, interest rates are going to keep going up. And then another's like, hey, someone from Goldman Sachs says that interest rates should start coming down in January. So you've got to use the best common sense that you have, because no one truly knows. But hey, I do know at this point, interest rates are higher than they were 4 or 5 months ago, right? Significantly higher. And certainly significantly higher than a year ago, like double, more than double. That stuff I know, it's verified. So keeping an eye on what's going on and trying to structure things to deal with, you know, I'm a wholesaler. Right? So my goal is I got to think like a buyer. And if I'm not thinking like a buyer, so I want to sell to a rehabber. I already know what the potential issues are for rehabbing, right? Hey, it's hard to determine the market value, what it will be in the future. Are people going to be buying retail at the current interest rates in 3, 4, 5, 6 months? Hard money lenders may be upping their values. There've been supply chain issues. There's, you know, on and on and on. These are all the issues. I want to know what I'm dealing with. Landlords. Hey, landlords love the BRRRR strategy, right? Where they can buy it a discount, put some work into it, get it occupied, then refinance based on the value, not the price. Well, do landlords really want to be looking at refinancing right now at, let's say, 7, 7.5% interest, maybe even higher? And I, in my mind, I say they could if the numbers still work, but the numbers better work. And so we better understand, when we're constructing these offers, how am I going to deal with my buyer? Or if I was the buyer, will it make buying criteria sense for me?
Okay, that's helpful. Makes sense.
All right. Offering too high of a price. Okay. And we've talked about being able that price is probably the least important variable that we deal with. And I still agree with that. The point I'm trying to make here is that, but why don't we just look at this example? Is there a point where the price gets too high?
Yeah.
Certainly possible, right? So if I can buy a property that's worth $500,000 and I offer $750,000, but the rest of the terms are good, right? I can pay $1,500 principal only payments for 20 years. And at that point, I'd owe $390,000. I would have to assume over the next 20 years, this property appreciates, and maybe significantly. I owe significantly less than where we are now. And my guess is that $1,500 a month payment on a property that's worth $500 gets me a really good cash flow somehow, some way, right? So it makes sense. And yet I'm offering, you know, 50% more than what the value is. However, here's what you give up, and you better understand this when you start trying to, you know, justify any price, right? So I have to keep this property long term, okay? That means that I give up basically any flexibility I have with this property. I can't refinance it. So if rates all of a sudden dropped from where they're at right now, back down to 3%, and I'd like to get that 3%, you know, locked in. I can't. I don't want to. I got even better than 3%, right? But no one's going to refinance. I'm upside down. So I have no flexibility. I can't sell it. I can't refinance it. I've got to, if I make this commitment, I got to say, hey, I'm probably in this for a minimum of 10 years or more. And if I say that the upside outweighs the inflexibility of this deal, then I probably should do it. If investors don't normally just sit idle, right? That, hey, I might have a property, but hey, I've owned it for 7, 8, 10 years, and maybe it's time that I cash this one in and get something different or bigger or better cash flowing or whatever. Or maybe it's time, I've got a cash flow crunch, I gotta pull some money out of somewhere and, you know, survive. Well, this property is not doing that for you, right? But this property is, hey, I gotta just hold the line. Isn't it also possible that you get into a property and you're like, I'm not really loving the types of tenants that I have, and they're high maintenance, and you know, but this might become a bigger headache than what it's worth. Well, you're stuck here. I mean, the only thing that you could do is potentially try to pass this deal on to someone else that doesn't know what you know yet. So to me, there is a limit on how much more you want to pay. What that is, I don't know that I could give you an equation or tell you, but these are the things that you've got to take into account. And, you know, if I wanted to sell this property to an owner occupant, could I do it? Doubtful, oh, right?
Yeah.
How am I going to convince an owner occupant that they should pay even more than the $750 on a property that's really worth $500? So I really have like one exit. And that one exit is, I got to rent this. I can't lease option it because I don't think anyone's going to do it. I can't owner finance it. I have one exit, and I got to stay in it at least long enough where the numbers even out. So I would tell you that even though price is the one variable that you can really play with, there should be a limit to it. And, you know, could I pay $550 for this property? Especially if I had principal only payments where, you know, hey, I'd be in a couple of years, I'd be, you know, even or better than that. Yeah, that I could probably do. But again, it may limit what I'm able to do with that property. Something to keep in mind.
So instead of like having an equation, it's basically asking yourself questions and making sure like at that price that you still have like options if you needed to get out of it. Like it can't be so high of a price that you're stuck with.
So I like the kinds of properties where if I'm going to overpay in a year, two, three, that, hey, I've already taken that inflated price and I've brought it down to where, hey, at least now I have other potential exit strategies and allows me to do some other things. I may not choose to do it because that wasn't the initial plan. And now I'd like to gain some of that equity, right? So, but at least it starts to give me more and more flexibility. If I really overprice, it's going to take years to get to the point where it makes sense price-wise. And it's going to take away my flexibility. Not saying that it doesn't work. It could. I mean, Cody, would you buy a property if I said, hey, I'll sell you this property. It's only worth $500,000, but I want $1 million for it. But you can pay me $100 a month until it's paid off. Would you do it?
I probably wouldn't, no.
You wouldn't? $100 a month until it's paid off.
Until it's paid off, that'd take forever.
Yeah, but who cares?
It's only 100. Imagine the cash flow.
Yeah.
It's only $100 a month.
I would do it. I'd certainly want to read any fine print, but I'd do it. All right. So any questions about that one? Does that one make sense?
Makes sense to me.
Okay. All right. Mistake number 12. Okay. This one's kind of, this is more of my experience dealing with sellers lately. And Which is not changing my mindset to more of a buyer's market. And let me explain what I mean by that. So for the last like 5 years, we've been chasing sellers. Sellers have been in the driver's seat, right? That I don't care again what kind of asset you're dealing with, single family, multi, commercial, doesn't matter. That basically a seller that had their property for sale, were getting multiple offers, getting potentially over asking, and in some cases, way over asking. When they weren't able to sell a property right away, they probably did even better waiting 90 days, 180 days. It was a seller's market and was super competitive. And so we were always trying to give what the seller wanted or more, right? And we were using owner finance to make that happen. Hey, I can pay you more than what you're asking, even though what you're asking is already kind of ridiculous. We can do it 3-year term, 4-year term, 5-year term, which is really kind of a shortened version of what we're really after. We weren't really addressing any needs. We were only addressing their wants, trying to get sellers to say yes in a market where they really didn't need to, right? Because they could basically just go put it on the market and find out what the market was willing to do. Well, now as things shift, and when I say this, not everyone's on board yet. Actually, not as many people are on board as I would like them to be. But I hope January, February, March, more and more we will start to see recognized, as long as interest rates either stay where they're at or go up, right? They start coming down, I think people, all bets are off, because who knows what's going to happen with the market. What I want to do is I want to have the mind shift of, I'm not chasing you anymore. I can provide solutions. And I want to know what your needs are, not what your wants are. I want to know what your needs are. So when I say that, not everyone is on board, right? Like, I can deal with this. Okay. But I'm setting the stage, right? So for some people, they recognize it now when we can start to do business. Some may need some time, which, okay, that's fine. So if that property is still on the market next month or the month after or the 3 months later, more than likely, they're starting to hear what I was saying, right? So whether that shifts their mindset completely, maybe, maybe not. But more and more will come around. So what I want to do is I'm starting to look at, hey, people that sell commercial properties for 2.5% to 4% cap rates and continue to do so. And their property has been listed for 6 months online. They've missed their opportunity. All right. The window is gone and yet they don't want to realize it yet. I'm going to tell them, look, there's just absolutely no way that I can pay what you're asking. And I'm not going to even make you a cash offer because, to be honest, it's going to be 30-ish% of a discount of where you're at, maybe more. And it would probably just be insulting to you. However, if there's a way that I could at least get close, it would be that I'd have to make payments to you out over some time. Is that going to be something that's going to work for you? And don't be surprised if I've got to structure some different kinds of creative terms to help me get there. Because you got to realize now, if I was to go to the bank and go get a loan, it's going to take me putting down 35 to 40% at the current interest rates to break even. Now, does that make any, I mean, you're an investor too, or you're a broker, or you're, you know, you understand real estate. Does that make any sense? Would you want to put down 35, 40% so you could break even? That you got to start thinking about putting down 50 or more percent of the purchase price doesn't make sense. So I would tell you that we can still pay retail. We can still pay even above retail to some degree. But we don't have to now. Shift that mindset into that, hey, it's not quite a buyer's market that I would call it, but that the power or the leverage is starting to shift to more of a buyer's market. And if we have creative finance or owner finance as a tool, that we're going to find more ways of meeting people's needs, get away from their wants, because eventually it will become about their needs. So does that make sense, or am I like way off base?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's also a very important time to have a good follow-up in place.
Yes.
It's like you said, some people aren't there yet, but a month from now, 2 months from now, they may be there.
Yep.
Make sure you stay at their top of mind. So when they make that decision, like, okay, I know who to call.
Well, and yep, there were times where we'd make offers and the seller would respond. And rather than say, no, we can't do that, we're trying to figure out how we can, right? And now we still have sellers that are countering or responding, and they're saying, well, I want higher rates. You know, rates are higher, or I want a shorter term, or I want a higher down payment. And now sometimes the answer is no, it's not going to happen. And here's why. I want to explain, because I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm trying to explain why we can't, and making them understand whether that clicks now. Trust me, if we talk in 60, 90, 120 days from now, it probably will have stuck. And so understanding that it is changing. Do we get to a full-blown buyer's market as opposed to a seller's market? I don't know, maybe. But right now it's shifting, and it's been a long time. It's been a seller's market for like 5+ years. So there are people that are in real estate that have never even seen anything but a seller's market. So I would tell you that get out of the mindset that you were in, which was try to give them everything, bend over backwards. Now start pumping the brakes a bit and start realizing can't do that anymore, won't do that anymore. And figure out now what works better for you in a changing market so you can adapt.
And we've had the last episodes that we did with Dan, where we're setting the stage when we're talking to, or the expectations when we're talking to the sellers now, right? Like how he kind of says, like, well, if you want cash, you know, then these are the consequences or whatever.
50%, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And to be honest, that's a lot that goes into it. Now, he may have been doing that all along. Who knows? We didn't really ask him that question. But at the very least, I know from my experience that, hey, we were chasing people, right? Because that's what we felt like we had to do. And we were trying to give them what they wanted, tried to figure out ways to do it. Now, we're not. Now we're trying to explain why we can't based on what's going on, and trying to, I don't even know if I would say educate, remind maybe, because I don't think make aware, help remove denial, something, but you know, they're brokers, realtors, and sellers that, you know, unless they're living under a rock, know that interest rates have gone up, probably have heard that prices are coming down. Yet, for whatever reason, they think that they should still get the same price on their property that they could have gotten 6 months ago. And unfortunately, that is not going to happen. So that is the conclusion of our series. Feedback or last words from both of you, and we'll wrap this up, and hopefully this was helpful to our audience.
Yeah, this was super helpful. Thank you for taking the time to put this together. It's always a good reminder, and seeing it all together is really helpful.
Was this helpful for you, Nicole?
Yeah, definitely. I like it when everything's in a series, because I can go back and listen to them myself. Versus right. Like trying to figure out where we actually talked about it. So yeah, this is super helpful. I for sure will have this as like a go back and listen to again?
Pretty much. I mean, if we haven't covered everything, we've certainly covered a lot, right, over the course of this podcast and 250 plus episodes. But you're right. We've talked about different strategies, like episode one and episode again, I don't know, 100, and episode probably 200, and probably various other times in there. But if you had to go find it, where would you go? And that I agree with. And I think what I like doing these series, I hope we get some feedback from our listeners and they tell us, yeah, we like it or we don't, because we could try to structure things that would make the most sense for them. All right.
Leave it in the comment.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know. Give us some feedback, whether you like it or you could care less. So, all right. Well, I wish you both very happy holidays, very healthy, happy, prosperous holiday season. Thank you all both of you for what you do. And thank all of you out there that listen to our podcast and make it worthwhile to keep doing so. So wish you all the best of holiday season as well. Go out and create some terms.